Hello. Chris is currently traversing through some South American airport. Hopefully he'll be joining us at least by voice and then later by face. Welcome back. Look, there he is. Welcome back. I want to first and foremost thank you. Big thanks to my wonderful brother, my Donian brother, Stoshik, who sent the huge super chat. I don't know why. I have a real terrible habit of not reading the super chats. So I blame the mods. They should be telling me to read them. It's their fault. So I think that Lenny will probably be fired for this. And then we'll figure out where to go from there. And also, I think there was Nathan sent a super chat as well as Haas. And Chris, I know you're listening backstage. Haas has asked that you make your hair and beard nice or something like that. I don't remember. Something about your hair and beard. I don't remember.
I love it. Greetings to everyone. I'm currently in transit, so I apologize for not being on video, but pleasure to be with you all this hour.
Yes, thank you for joining us via voice. I'm sorry, everyone, you won't see his handsome face. Maybe he'll upload a picture so at least you get something to look at. But anyway, throw the whole show in the bin. I had some little outline, you know, I woke up to a little leak. And then all of a sudden, like an hour and a half ago, the floodgates opened. And I said, just, you know, throw it in the fire and we'll just try to start over. We'll start with what we do know for now, which is that Mr. Shara comes to Washington. I think the timeline of this visit is very important. We talked about it a little bit on Sunday. He had arrived, played basketball with some people thought it was AI, which was kind of funny. It could be. Played some basketball with our wonderful U.S. military members. I think some of them were even generals. And then following that, he met with Trump. Interestingly, he arrived at the White House and he was snuck in the back door. You could see him. There's videos of him coming in and out of the back door. No pun intended. But there he is sneaking in through the back door, which is your first clue that the Trump administration probably knew this wasn't the best idea. Not very good optics.
Yeah, because usually they have like the camera crew out there. They have the whole photo op right when the car door opens and, you know, they greet each other on the side. And that didn't happen this time. Now you have to peer through the fucking fence.
Yeah, they looked through the fence, which I thought was very interesting. It gives a big signal. No press, no joint statement. The stuff that they did choose to release is very strange. I don't recall that really anything came out of the meeting at all. But here is one, a really, really odd clip.
This is men's. The men's fragrance. Yeah. This is it. It's the best fragrance. Come here.
I have one here, sir.
Thank you. Okay. So what we'll do is just take that, Joe, put it in. And then the other one is for your wife. How many wives?
Your wife.
You guys, I never know. Right? I never know.
How many wives do you got? I thought that was so funny because at the same time, people are shrieking about Sharia law and like Islam taking over the country and Trump's over here like, how many wives you got? I wish I could have more than one wife.
Totally cool. And also Trump's culturally competent in this regard. And when it comes to women, of course, women and sex, he's good to go.
And
Everybody knows the cologne.
Arab and a Levantine man love a good oud, a good cologne.
Yeah, an oud, that's right. That's what I thought he put on him.
This is men's. We'll send you him with one for your wife. Oh, anyway, it's kind of strange that that's what they chose to release from that
whole entire exchange. We kind of don't really know much that came out of there. We do know that sanctions are, they're attempting to lift sanctions. Now, guys, remember, what you see is that Trump cannot lift sanctions on his own. So he has extended the moratorium or whatever you want to call it, on the Caesar sanctions to at a later, because we weren't in session at the time. Congress just came back in session. We'll get to that later. But, and so they'll have to vote on that later. The sanctions themselves need to be lifted by an act of Congress. So they're in a moratorium again for another 6 months. And there's no word on when that will be voted on. Interesting timeline of events. The same day after he meets with Trump, I'm pretty sure it was after. Regardless, it's the same day. Oh, here's Giuliani leaving the White House. It was interesting.
Like he's on a chariot.
There were people there with free Syria flags, and they were kind of cheering him on. And then a Kurdish network posted this. And then it kind of, there was a little bit of a back and forth online about
sectarianism.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. And just in the, and a little bit of Sunni sectarianism, which was interesting. But yeah, so the same day he met with Trump, he met with the rabbi. He met with Rabbi Yosef Hamra, who is the leader of the historic Syrian Jewish diaspora. At the meeting, he received an Abrahamic blessing of unity, and Syrian American Jews like Joe Jihadi hyping it. He said it was history in the making. There was tons of money pledged, and they let it chant saying New Syria. So if you guys remember, old Syria was obviously anti-Zionist. So this is a very huge normalization signal. So the rabbi himself is a Brooklyn-based leader of the 20,000-strong Syrian Jewish diaspora, which was exiled in 1992 after Assad Senior's crackdowns. He is from a powerhouse family. His brother, Binyamin, runs Israel's Syrian Jewish community.
Interesting. Maybe everybody should go check out our conspiracy clip. There's the hood.
So he gave the blessing. He said, Hashem watches over you and for a positive future for Syria. They exchanged gifts. He gave Giuliani a siddur, which is a prayer book. And the rabbi was given a Syrian artifact. He himself has been lobbying and pushing for Jewish site preservation since HTS took Idlib. Giuliani's crew was the one that gaslit the, if you guys remember the April 2025 Jewish visit to Syria, where they, I think they toured a lot of the sites. Joe Jihadi, which is, he's a Syrian American Jewish businessman. He's a real estate mogul. It's so weird how everybody involved in this administration is a real estate mogul. He said, I'm excited. It's exciting to see a Syrian president in the United States. We're business folks, us Arabs and Jews. It's time to partner. I guess the hat should just go.
Interesting. Yeah. Just keep that hood on there for the segment.
He's been working on this since at least May. On this sort of integration. So very interesting.
Maybe a couple of Mays ago too, if we get the
real
behind
story,
the scenes details, the real story once it comes out, if it ever does.
Exactly. Giuliani in an interview following this on the Golan Heights said, Israel occupied the Golan Heights in order to protect Israel. And now they are imposing conditions in the south of Syria in order to protect the Golan Heights. So after a few years, maybe they will occupy the center of Syria in order to protect the south of Syria. They will reach Munich on that pathway. It's like you get it, but you can't. I don't know. It's like he gets it, but he doesn't. I'm not sure. Maybe we lost Chris. Not sure. Regardless, after the meeting with the Syrian Jewish diaspora, he has his next meeting. Let's see, where is it?
Mr. President, welcome to the IMF.
I could have probably cut that down, but the music was so interesting, wasn't it? We didn't add that, I don't think. I think
that that was on the original clip,
The original, yeah. So, guys, remember?
Of course, he had to make a pilgrimage. He had to make a pilgrimage to the White House. He had to make a pilgrimage to the Jewish community, and then had to make a pilgrimage to the IMF, you know?
Yeah, you see how we tell stories here on DD Geopolitics? We know what's really going on. Okay, so remember when the IMF was the boogeyman for Latin America's lost decade? Well, now it's going to rebrand Syria. But you guys remember, this is just the consensus playbook. So you guys know about the IMF from 1944 Bretton Woods Conference. HQ is in Washington, D.C. Their core gig is to stabilize global finance by lending to countries in balance of payments crises. Think short-term emergency cash with strings attached. Conditions like austerity to ensure repayment. The World Bank is same origin, but long-term focus, loans and grants for development projects, et cetera, et cetera. These two are known as the Bretton Woods twins and are obviously U.S.-led because when they were created, the U.S. made sure to establish a veto power inside of it. They hold the majority share, so they have a veto power. So this created what we know as the Washington Consensus, which is, I just condensed it down into four pillars, which is fiscal discipline, which means slashing deficits. Syrian war debt would mean austerity first. I think Syria's war debt is over $100 billion. So expect a lot of austerity there. Privatization and open FDI, which means Syria's oil and gas and phosphates will be ripe for privatization. They'll be looped into the IMF debt trap with United States corporations looting what's left of Syria's natural resources. Trade liberalization, which will lift the sanctions, yes, but will push for exports, will flood markets with cheap imports, gut local industry, and echo Egypt's IMF path with growth but no jobs. And of course, the best part, the deregulation, which opens the doors for all of them to come in. You know what's so interesting? And somebody reminded me of this on a space, and forgive me because I don't remember who said it, but they were like, wow, this is interesting. This is what happened to Russia. Right after the Soviet Union collapsed, all of the Russian Jewish diaspora went home to go privatize the whole country and then leave again and go back to Israel or America or the United Kingdom, where so many of them went. And it's same exact playbook. So now you'll get this Syrian Jewish diaspora who's been waiting in the wings will go, and the Americans obviously will privatize the whole place, and then they'll scurry off to their places in the Gulf and Israel and America.
You know it. They'll make the desert bloom.
Make the desert bloom. Well, and if that wasn't enough, all of this is occurring on the Marines' 250th birthday. And Veterans Day.
What better way to remember?
Right.
What better way to remember the fallen?
And I did catch a lot of people that were actually, I talked to a few people where this was their straw that broke the camel's back, proverbial camel's back, for their MAGA thing. They were like, it was the meeting with Jolani while it was Veterans Day and the Marine Corps birthday. That was it. This was before
of all the days to pick it.
Exactly. It almost they did it on purpose.
Yeah. Did nobody think about this? Did nobody have, you know, I don't know. I assume that they think about the calendars and the events and the holidays and all that shit. But clearly, hey, listen, at the end of the day, it's the truth is what we've been saying all along. They paid for them. They're basically U.S. They're basically U.S. veterans too. Al-Qaeda is U.S. veterans too. They paid for them. They funded them, they armed them, they trained them. And then, you know, people lost legs and then posed with the people who blew up their legs. It's great. You know, this is how it works.
That was wild. Brian Mast
with crazy.
No legs, purposefully wearing shorts and standing next to Jolani. Even the Zionists were pissed.
Insane.
Really insane. I think. Anyway, and also, while all of these Epstein things are leaking, I want to let you know while we're on the topic of Syria, because Tom Barak is basically running the show in Syria and Lebanon, ready to start civil war in Lebanon and do whatever he wants to Syria. Well, he's included in the emails, in the Epstein emails, to where
he is. I saw that
he is included in the Epstein emails. Guys, we're going to be holding a space after, because there's all still leaking. So we're going to be holding a space in an hour or so after the show. But Jeffrey Epstein wrote to Tom Barak, send photos of you and child. It makes me smile. That's March 9th, 2016.
That's not creepy.
Why are rich people so creepy? They're literally so creepy. And then March 9th, 2016, Jeffrey Epstein also writes Tom Barak. He was, right then, he was U.S. Special Envoy to Syria. He said, FYI, I receive many calls a week about both Donald Trump and Clinton from reporters. So he's basically saying that he's fielding media inquiries about the Clintons and the Trump and Trump before the 2016 election. So he's letting Tom Barak know that he has stuff on both Trump and Clinton. And now Tom Barak is in the administration running the show in Syria and Lebanon. So just keep that in mind. Pay attention to these leaks, because they implicate or they name a lot of people, these emails.
And by the way, they want to do the same as what they're doing to Syria, to Lebanon. There's been a big, you know, sort of push. Let's end the bureaucracy. Let's end, first of all, not only disarm Hezbollah, but also open up things for capitalist investment, the markets, things like that, to try to, you know, put Lebanon simultaneously on a diet and a fire sale. And that's what they're really interested in. I mean, people are salivating because Lebanon's a rich country. They've got a lot of good things that could be exploited, especially tourism. They got nice beaches. They got that Mediterranean. So there's a lot of people who are looking to see how they can combine the two. And I mean, investment is ripe in these areas. And it's ultimately a question of their sovereignty. And you can clearly see that Syria is selling its sovereignty for nothing, you know, just giving it away for free.
Yeah. So I thought that the implosion started with the Laura Ingraham interview. Now, Laura Ingraham is a bit of a tough customer. I get it. She's a tough interviewer. She's kind of got that, you know, she's a bit intimidating. She's a kind of a no-nonsense lady. I don't like her views, but I like Laura Ingraham. I think she's funny. I think she's a good interviewer. Well, she was sticking to her style in this interview, but I think she was trying to lead Trump down the easy road. But let's take a look. So this, we'll start with some levity.
Another one thing with gold.
Why not?
You can't imitate gold, real gold. There's no paint that imitates
gold.
So
these aren't like from Home Depot or something?
No, this is not Home Depot stuff.
No, not stuff you buy.
This is not Home Depot.
So weird that she asked specifically about Home Depot, because I mean, seriously, there they are. It's almost like Laura Ingraham already knew. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I just want to say that when I saw those pictures, it reminded me of, like, I don't know, like Persian princesses of, like, you know, like fucking, I don't know, in Los Angeles, you know, Beverly Hills or something, or maybe like the Gotti family or some kind of house like that. It felt just over the top, a little bit Versailles. It felt a little bit Versailles, but a little bit gaudy, like beyond that.
I wrote a post. Horrible. I was like, this country influence in the United States is getting out of control.
Really.
Anyway, so it just keeps going downhill from there. It just is more and more bizarre, but this is when it really starts to tank.
Folks are not thrilled about this idea of hundreds of thousands of foreign students in the United States. We have about 350,000 Chinese. One point during COVID, you were going to, you know, push up, you know, get them out, but that was pulled back. You've said as many as 600,000 Chinese students could come to the United States. Why, sir, is that a pro-MAGA position when many American kids want to go to school and there are places not for them, and these universities are getting rich off Chinese money?
Sure. Never said about China, but we do have a lot of people coming in from China. We always have. China and other countries. We also have a massive system of colleges and universities. And if we were to cut that in half, which perhaps makes some people happy, you would have half the colleges in the United States go out of business.
So what?
Well, I think that's a big deal.
Are they fans?
You would have the historically,
the United States?
Yeah, but you would have, as you know, historically black colleges and universities would all be out of business. You would have a system of colleges and universities. Would
so we're dependent on China to keep our university
China,
system
but,
going?
But I think it's good to have, outside countries. Look, I want to be able to get along with the
they're
world.
They're not the French. They're the Chinese. They spy on us. They steal our intellectual property.
What do you think? The French are better?
Yeah.
Really? I don't know. I'll tell you. I'm not so sure. We've had a lot of problems with the French. You don't want to cut half of the people, half of the students from all over the world that are coming into our country, destroy our entire university and college system. I don't want to do that.
I wouldn't lose anything.
And don't forget, MAGA was my idea. MAGA was nobody else's idea. I know what MAGA wants better than anybody else. And MAGA wants to see our country thrive.
There's so much to unpack here.
A lot.
So much. So starting with the fact that he wants to keep the colleges in business. I thought MAGA hated colleges and thought they should be out of business.
Or that they should just be focused on the private and not necessarily like government. It felt a little bit of government intervention-y, didn't it? Or like kind of government involvement.
Right.
Which and is so, what they hate.
Exactly. Then he mentions the historically black colleges and universities, which is insane. Are the Chinese students going to the HBCUs? And since when does Trump care about the HBCUs?
I mean, I think that there are Chinese students there, but it's a minority, and it is nowhere near the numbers of other big major state and private universities. I can't imagine. I don't know. Is he trying to, you know? Okay, I got to put the hood on. Is he trying to instigate tension? Because you know how the Chinese community, you know how the Asians are seen as like the model minority, and then to send them to HBCUs. And to see what I mean, who knows? Who is it? I would not put it past the Trump administration to be experimenting on strategies of tension. Really? No, I'm serious.
Well, true. Serious. And also recall, I don't remember if it was Sunday or last Wednesday, we covered what he was bragging. It was Sunday. He was bragging to the Republican Jewish Coalition of all the money he sued or gotten out of these universities to give to Jews. For hurting their feelings. Why are exactly. you suing them if we need Chinese students to keep them afloat?
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think there's something more to this. I don't know. I don't know what's what the end game is, but clearly something's brewing behind the scenes.
What do you make of the comment with the French and the Chinese? I understand Trump doesn't like France, but historically, they're obviously more of an ally to us than the Chinese, and Laura's sort of pushback. I felt like she was trying to get him to be like, come on, like, I'm giving it to you on a silver platter and you're still not eating it.
No, I think, Trump wants to be a strong man, and he doesn't necessarily believe in the traditional allies like France and the UK. Okay, a little bit because he has businesses there. But I think that that he's willing to sell anybody out, even America's old friends and allies. For nothing. And he's willing to equate the two or to outright say like, well, we don't even need them. He did say he wanted to do Bastille. Like he loves that. Yeah. So he loves some aspects of the French, but I don't think he likes all of them. I think he was a Freedom Fries guy, if I remember correctly. So just FYI.
It gets worse.
There's never going to be a country like what we have right now.
And does that
the
mean,
Republicans have to talk about it, Laura.
And does that mean the H-1B visa thing will not be a big priority for your administration? Because if you want to raise wages for American workers, you can't flood the country with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands
agree,
of foreign
but
workers.
You also do have to bring in talent. When
well, we
a
have
country
plenty of talented people
no,
here.
You don't. No, you don't.
We don't have talented being, people
no,
here.
No, you don't have certain talents, and people have to learn. You can't take people off an unemployment. Like an unemployment line and say, I'm going to put you into a factory where we're going to make missiles or I'm going to put
you. How did we ever do it before?
Well, let me
just,
I'll give you an example. In Georgia, they raided because they wanted illegal immigrants out. They had people from South Korea that made batteries all their lives. You know, making batteries are very complicated. It's not an easy thing. It's very dangerous. A lot of explosions, a lot of problems. They had like 500 or 600 people early stages to make batteries and to teach people how to do it. Well, they wanted them to get out of the country. You're going to need that, Laura. I mean, I know you and I disagree on this. You can't just say country's coming in, going to invest $10 billion to build a plant and going to take people off an unemployment line who haven't worked in 5 years and they're going to start making missiles. It doesn't work that way.
MAGA.
Wild that they're talking about missiles. I thought it was the peace president.
MAGA lost their shit. And rightfully
I'm sure they
so.
Did.
I think this dog is one of my lip glosses. This friggin' dog. I can't. Anyway, but yeah, they lost their minds. And rightfully so. Rightfully so. Guys, don't forget that back in December, it was over Christmas, the H-1B fiasco that nearly destroyed Vivek's career. When he said, you know, basically not, and these aren't, don't, I can't quote him, but it was basically how people took it was that he was calling Americans lazy and stupid. And, but I did a little bit more research. And just so you guys know, only 23% of American-born STEM graduates are working in STEM. Look at the chart. They're not even working in their field. They're saying they can't get the jobs. Why? Because they're labeled for H-1Bs. Why? Because the companies get tax breaks and they can pay them much less for the same job. This isn't like science rockets. This isn't like difficult to kind of detangle. I guess we lost Chris. Maybe he's grabbing his bag and getting himself through customs. Because this is really bad because this is his segment, his time to shine, as he is an Epstein truther. Here's Chris with his own black book. Hopefully he gets back on the stream and he can tell you the story behind his obtaining of his own Epstein black book. Yes, Chris has an Epstein black book. Correct, 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 correct. So hopefully, what is that pick? I'm serious. It's an Epstein black book. I posted about it on my personal Twitter account. And I believe, don't quote me, maybe a British or Brazilian think tank published an article about it with the contents. So hopefully he comes back and he'll discuss that a little bit more. But keep in mind, I woke up this morning. Now I'm in like one of the last time zones on Earth. I'm in like the third or fourth to last, probably the second to last where people actually live. And I woke up to the pardon. So obviously we have this pardon from Trump. Now this is the first time that Trump is officially requesting a pardon for Bibi. It's important to read the contents. Again, we're citing this 3,000-year-old conflict that he's secured peace in. And he says, Bibi is now leading Israel into a time of peace. Israel is still bombing Lebanon today, just an FYI, in addition to all of the goings on in Gaza. Bibi is leading Israel into a time of peace, which includes my continued work with key Middle East leaders to add many additional countries to the world-changing Abraham Accords. Okay, that's wrong in and of itself because nobody will join the Abraham Accords, which is why they had to get Kazakhstan to do it, to throw them a bone. He is asking for the pardon, and he says he believes that this case against Bibi, who has fought alongside me for a long time, including against the very tough adversary of Israel, Iran, is a political and unjust prosecution, and he asks the president of Israel, Yitzhak Herzog, to end the lawfare once and for all. Very interesting that this is coming out today, given what else is going on. Really interesting. I also thought it was interesting that Trump is very much saying, you know, Bibi and I are partners in crime. Well, he's saying they're partners in peace, but we know what he's really saying. They're partners in crime. All week long, this Epstein stuff has sort of been trickling out. DropSite has been posting a lot of different smaller stories. Most people probably aren't very interested in them. DropSite does have very good access to leakages, I've noticed. And they've actually linked to a few Dropboxes as well. So here, these are all kind of low, not low level, but, you know, around the world, baby stories, whatnot, and what have you. That has been going on all week, if you guys have noticed. This morning, this is the first tranche of emails that were released by oversight Dems. Now, I understand when you get stuff from oversight Dems, it can be taken sometimes with a bit of a grain of salt. I get it. But so here's where it starts. Now, here's the three emails. I don't know if you guys can see them, because I don't think I can on this. But hold on, let me grab. So this morning, this comes out. These are some emails that happened between Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine in the first email. In the second email, that is journalist Michael Wolff writing to Epstein. And in the third email, that is Epstein writing back to Michael Wolff. So these emails confirm that Trump was definitely involved with Epstein in some capacity, but that he hasn't barked. He says, I want you to realize that the dog that hasn't barked is Trump. This victim right here, this redacted victim, is Virginia Guffrey. She spent hours at my house with him, but he has never once been mentioned. Read this commentary from Michael Wolff. It's incredibly, incredibly damning. He says, I think you should let him, Trump, hang himself. If he says he hasn't been on the plane or to the house, then that gives you valuable PR and political currency. You can hang him in a way that potentially generates a positive benefit for you, or if it really looks like he could win, you could save him and generate a debt. Very interesting that Michael Wolff is a journalist. These two are pretty freely talking about blackmailing the potential president of the United States. At that point, he hadn't been elected yet. In 2019, Jeffrey Epstein writes to Michael Wolff that Virginia Guffrey, he says, Virginia Guffrey, Mar-a-Lago, Trump said he asked me to resign, but I was never a member. Of course he knew about the girls because he asked Ghislaine to stop. So Jeffrey Epstein was never a member of Mar-a-Lago, which is something that I think Trump has stated more than once, and that he had ejected him from the club. That doesn't seem like it happened, and we'll get into that a little bit more. This is another really interesting email from Michael Wolff. This is 2016, again, right before the Republican or right before the presidential election in which Trump won. There's an opportunity to come forward this week and talk about Trump in such a way that could garner you great sympathy and help finish him. Interested? Are we kind of understanding why Jeffrey Epstein died or what had to be removed from the situation? Why Trump has called the Epstein files a Democratic hoax? You know, we knew this was ridiculous when he did Bindergate. If you guys remember when they took a select like dozen or so influencers and gave them binders at the White House. And then I think that they expected that to kind of quiet things down. It's just been an absolute farce since then, an absolute charade. It's so insulting. I was never an Epstein truther. It gives me the ick. I think it's a little too dark for me. So I don't kind of dive into the rabbit holes. And I've talked about this before. I don't usually like dive into the rabbit holes of the trafficking aspect and the island itself. But I am incredibly interested in who was blackmailed and what world leaders. And we are posting them on the large Twitter account, and forgive us because they're coming out in a really disorganized fashion. We're trying to get them out, and I'm trying to get them out as sort of organized as I can. And I'm sure at later point, they'll all be kind of compiled in a much more readable way. But if you look, he implicates tons of world leaders, presidents of Mongolia, leaders of India. He talks about Peter Thiel. He talks about Gordon Brown, prior prime minister of the United Kingdom or of Britain. There's a whole email exchange regarding Prince Andrew. An entire email exchanged. Epstein even jokes about Trump and Andrew being together at one point and laughs and says, ha ha, those two, look at those two hanging out together. They're both connected by Virginia Guffrey. As you know, Prince Andrew was Virginia Guffrey's abuser, who had to give a settlement to her. I believe it's undisclosed to this day. Don't forget, somebody knew this was coming because either last week or the week before, somebody correct me in the listener or in the viewers, Prince Andrew was stripped of all of his titles and everything recently. That was recently in the news. You go through these emails, they talk about Prince Andrew and Virginia Guffrey. They talk about Prince Andrew having an illegitimate child. Talk about Prince Andrew's wife having to take a one-way ticket to South Africa. She took a bribe to do so or something. It's just madness. And the people that are implicated in this are people from the Obama administration. This is not just MAGA. Let me be clear. This is not just MAGA. He also implicates Hillary Clinton in an affair with another lawyer. So this is not just MAGA. Okay? And so for people who say, oh, you know, it's a Democratic hoax, for them, that takes Hillary Clinton out. If that rabbit hole is explored. You think that the Democrats would sacrifice Hillary Clinton to take out Trump? Do you think they would be allowed to do that? No. No. You would never. That's a good question. Why are you hating on Trump but not Bill Clinton? Bill Clinton was mentioned in the emails. Epstein said he was never at the island. I hate Bill Clinton too. Fuck Bill Clinton. Mostly for Kosovo. So I probably hate Bill Clinton more than I hate. Well, I don't even hate Trump. Just, this is just bizarre. But that's what the email said. Sorry. Hate to burst your bubble. I don't know what to tell you. You say BS. You know, I give you all the other one. You want some stuff to be true, some stuff not to be true. I don't know what to tell you. Why would he implicate Hillary Clinton and then lie to keep Bill Clinton safe? Especially right now when Bill Clinton has no power. Hillary Clinton has more power than Trump than Bill Clinton, and Trump has more power than both of them. So I don't know. Again, I'm going to reiterate that I'm not a big Epstein truther. I don't like to do human trafficking stuff. It gives me the ick and it scares me. It really does. It like freaks me out. It's like too dark. It's way, way too dark when people start talking about that. Anyway, the leaks are still coming out. Here's the smoking gun for what most people are going to consider the smoking gun. I would think. This is an email. This was, this is an email from one of the Epstein victims to Epstein. They're talking, the exchange is about like, can we go to dinner on this date? We'll be in Paris. Are you still in Paris? He says, you're welcome at my house as always. And more privately, she says, very well, just send me the address again and code to the door so I can get to the second floor and send me the day and time. Thanks. And he gives her the code for the gate. She replies, I'm at the door, but I will wait for my time. I don't want to come early and find Trump in your house. Why is this a smoking gun? This email was sent in 2019. So if Trump was at an Epstein residence in 2019 or even 2018, that means that he lied. He lied the entire time. He lied. Sorry, 2017. The email's from 2017. Regardless, he said that he had cut ties with Epstein and that he was a creep, I believe. That's what Caroline Leavitt said, that he was a pedophile and a creep. Caroline Leavitt, just some advice to you is stop calling Epstein a pedophile and a creep. because this is not going to go the way you think it is. I would stop. I would stop calling Epstein a pedophile and a creep because your boss, you know. Anyway, here's a clip put together by one of the greatest accounts on Twitter, especially right now, Gen X Girl. Please follow her if you don't. She's getting all of her flowers right now. I've known her for years, I think at least 3 or 4 years. Fantastic person and a fantastic investigative journalist. But this is a clip that I stole from her.
Really wanted to talk to you about the fact Mike Johnson is now reopening the house, which means guess what's back on the docket? The Epstein files.
So what will happen theoretically is that the House will vote to subpoena the Epstein file or files. Theoretically, it is everything that that exists within the United States government on Jeffrey Epstein.
Breaking, just coming through the wire right now. House effort to force a vote on compelling the Justice Department to release the Epstein files has now reached the required 218 signatures. The petition only crossed the threshold after Speaker Mike Johnson delayed the swearing-in of a newly elected Democrat, Adelita Grijalva, for 7 weeks. She became the final signer when she was sworn in. Other news that came out today. The Trump administration contacted Lauren Boebert and Nancy Mace today to try to get them to change their votes or their signatures, withdraw their signatures from the petition. Guys, remember, 4 Republicans were on the petition. We had Thomas Massie, Marjorie Taylor Greene, of course, Nancy Mace, Lauren Boebert. Okay. Trump has already declared Thomas Massie persona non grata. So we can't ask him to change his signature. All of MAGA is going after Marjorie Taylor Greene. So he can't ask her to change her signature. So he reaches out to Lauren Boebert and Nancy Mace. But what he forgets is why the two of them have to sign this petition. Nancy Mace has to sign this petition because sexual assault, human trafficking is a policy that she stands on. Lauren Boebert, when she was elected, she was part of the QAnon movement. She was QAnon adjacent. She took a lot of grief for that, but she's one of the Save the Children people. She's very big on human trafficking. She cannot take her signature off of this petition. Come to find out, at first they said, oh, it was just a phone call. You know, he called Laura to talk to her about it. Senior White House and Justice Department officials met with Representative Lauren Boebert to attempt to get her to withdraw her support for an impending House bill. President Trump called Nancy Mace to get them to get her to withdraw support. Here is what Caroline Leavitt had to say about it. The gaslighting.
Given your interest in transparency, Caroline, why are White House officials then meeting with Representative Boebert in an effort to try and get her to not sign this petition calling for the release of the files?
Doesn't it show transparency that members of the Trump administration are willing to brief members of Congress whenever they please? Doesn't that show our level of transparency? Doesn't that show the level of transparency when we are willing to sit down with members of Congress and address their concerns? That's a defining factor of transparency, having discussions with members of Congress about various issues. And I'm not going to detail conversations that took place in the Situation Room in the press briefing room. Reagan.
I'm so glad you're back, Chris. We're talking about the Epstein leaks and everything.
Oh my God. How is that? Can I just ask a question? How is that transparency? That's just good communication, I guess, if you want to be generous. But that's not transparency because you're just communicating.
The representatives didn't seek out the administration. The administration sought them out. So what's the transparency?
Yeah, exactly. They didn't go to them and tell them, okay, here are all the files. Here's everything. You guys do with it as you will. They went to them to say, actually, we don't really think this is the best idea, but we're talking to you. So I guess that's a good thing. It's total gaslighting.
Speaking of bad ideas, Bibi, thanks Trump for the pardon. Probably not the best right now, Bibi. If I could advise you, don't. I would just try to distance yourself from Trump until at least after the weekend, if you can. By the way, I've already noticed Bibi's already set to make another state visit. This motherfucker can't stop coming here. He's here more than he's in his own connected.
That's because he's wanted in his own country.
Yeah, yeah, right. Nobody likes him in his own
country. Exactly, exactly.
Well, Chris, exactly. I think this was the smoking gun. I don't know if you saw it yet, but this is the email from one of the victims in 2017 that states that she was at Jeffrey Epstein's residence and didn't want to come in early to find Trump in his home.
Oh, my God. I mean,
I can't remember what the date was that Trump cited, but he did say a certain year. And I feel like it was in the early 2000s that he said, I cut off Jeffrey Epstein because he was a creep.
No, there's no cutting off. There's no cutting off.
Right, but Trump claimed that.
He claimed it.
Like what he when he claimed to have done that. Like when
mid to late 2000s.
Yeah, I don't think 2000s. It was after 2010.
No, it wasn't. No, because already at that time there had already been some reporting surfacing and things like that. People were eyeing the situation quite closely, although nothing really substantial at that point.
The viewers are all begging me to know where a little bit of the story behind this photo, and then we'll probably get to wrapping.
So, of course, people, you know, I've had this book now since 2020, and it's in a safe place now. It's very safe, away from my family, thank God, and everybody around me. So I will say that the book, of course, is very valuable because a lot of the contacts are still active. So a lot of the telephone numbers in there still work. We know because we've called them and spoken to people. That's how we help to authenticate the book. But the story, of course, for those who don't know, the story is basically, you know, yours truly loves to just spend hours and hours online researching things because that's what a researcher and academic does.
Yeah.
Instead of being in a library, which I normally am, in a card catalog or in an archive or somewhere cool, maybe on an archaeological dig, the internet is also an archaeological dig of sorts, just with a shorter timeline. But I was online searching for the first book, which Nick Bryan had released via Gawker at the time, just, you know, a few years back. And as I was searching for the first book, which was published, I stumbled onto an eBay listing for another Epstein book. And so I was quite surprised with this whole thing. And I said, at first I found it very strange. I said, why would somebody be selling about a $500 reproduction of something that you can just PDF and I could print it out at my school for free? So I messaged the person directly and I asked them, can you tell me the provenance of this item? Can you tell me about the book, how you came to have it? Is it real? Like, what do you know about it? And the person was very genuine, basically like, look, I found it in the 90s. And when they said found it in the 90s, my head, you know, kind of exploded because the other book was authenticated to the 2000s. And so this would mean that this was an earlier version. So immediately I started to ask some other questions. And basically it was just kind of like, you know, a woman who was kind of like a music kind of groupie hanging around New York City in the 90s, kind of, you know, kind of like, I don't know, kind of in between grunge hippie style. And was just walking down Fifth Avenue and saw this group of people, this entourage, get into a limo and this guy dropped this book. And so she picked it up and kind of ran after them. They left. And so she kind of looked at it and said, oh, it's a curiosity, because nobody knew who a lot of the people were. I mean, she knew some of the people in there, but she was like, okay, it's just, you know, an average book. But she didn't know who Epstein was. She knew who Trump was and things like that, of course, in those days. So she kept the book and she eventually moved to the West Coast from the East Coast and put it into storage. And lo and behold, as she was cleaning out her storage unit, she stumbled back on the book and then realized what it was. And then she tried to contact, before me, she contacted the New York Times, the Washington Post, MSNBC, ABC, CBS about the book and said that she had it and that they should report on it. And nobody reported on it. So she never got a call. She even told me, she's like, I wrote personally to like Rachel Maddow and all these people and nobody got back to me. So I said, look, I'm going to buy the book. I'm going to take the risk. And, you know, my wife at the time was ready to hang me and, you know, string me up for spending what it ended up being, right, about $425. But she said she needed new tires and she needed to sell it quick. So I was like, no problem, I'll help you out. So when I got it at the post office after work, and she had expressed it over, I instantly knew when I opened it up, because I work a lot with old archival materials. I've worked with Byzantine manuscripts. I've worked with Ottoman era manuscripts and, you know, stuff from the 18th and 19th centuries. So I knew the paper quality was not contemporary, was not anything that we would, it would cost a lot more to make a forgery of that style. And the fastener of the book, the Gestetner fastener, was for a company that was long since bankrupt and out of business.
You are so
I knew. I know. That's why I have 5 going on 6 master's degrees and a whole other slew of credentials, because I'm just that kind of, you know, person. So I called immediately. I know, because some people were commenting and being like, oh, Brace Belden of True Anon thinks it's fake, but it's not true, because I called him immediately. Because
I had been in, sucks.
You know, it was crazy. So anyway, so I called Brace again. At the time, he had the True Anon podcast, which they still have. And I was like, hey, I have this book. And he was like, no problem. Let me connect you with Nick Bryant. And then I got in touch with Julie K. Brown of the Miami Herald, who was the one who originally broke the big story and has been one of the leading journalists on the case. So Nick Bryant, I sent them both PDF copies of the book, because I photographed it and, you know, kept it for safekeeping just in case something happened. I put it in a safe place, and they authenticated it and were like, absolutely, let's connect you with the editor at the time at Gawker, who was at Business Insider. And so, and that was Tim Cook. So we got together, and he came up and was able to bring a team. They took the book, they authenticated, they brought it to a forensic analyst. They gave me like this massive report. They put it under the microscope. They did all sorts of tests on it. They were able to call all the numbers. And it was a quite extensive investigation. So we authenticated it. I was really nervous about a government coming down on me, but because Epstein was dead in Ghislaine's court case, they didn't admit this as evidence because it wasn't in government custody. And they basically were like, we don't know about this second book, but we're not going to have it as one of the items. So at that point, I've just had it ever since. And, you know, people have been very interested. People have offered all sorts of things for it. I've tried to auction it so I could get rid of it, because, you know, for all intents and purposes, it feels like a satanic relic. I like my icons. I don't like this relic around. So I still have it, and I'm doing research. There's going to be an article coming out soon on a very bombshell news story. I can't go into details now. I've been working on it for about 4 years. And I think that we're at the tail end of it. So just get ready for that in the next few months. Hopefully nothing happens to me. I'm not suicidal.
What about me? I got to get out of the belly of the beast. Oh my God.
I know. We got to get you said. Actually, a couple of people messaged me when this Vermont Digger article went live. And they were like, are you safe? Are you okay? We're so worried about you. We're so worried about everybody. I said, listen, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm not in Vermont right now, so I'm chill. But we got to get you out. We got to get Sarah out.
Anyway,
but the story is incredible. I mean, the story is like an Indiana Jones, modern Indiana Jones story, really.
Yeah, I can't wait until it's like actually public. We'll just tease you guys with that for now. Speaking of teasing, we don't usually do this, but on our next episode, as we wrap this up, there's a story developing about Zelensky. Some huge scandal going on. You guys recall?
Major, crippling.
Way deeper dive on Sunday when Chris is settled and stuff, and we can really get into it. But if you guys recall, Zelensky was closing down the corruption sort of auditors in the Ukraine. Now it's coming out that they were laundering money, hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not looking good for Zelensky, but it's also not looking good for Trump. It seems like everything's kind of coming down at once. It's bizarre.
Which is a perfect recipe for a war, to be honest.
Well,
a perfect recipe for a distraction.
I had gotten to a back and forth earlier. Someone said that they thought that the Epstein stuff was a distraction for Venezuela. And I said, I disagree. I think it's the opposite. the Venezuela thing was going to be the distraction for Epstein, and they were racing and they ran out of time. Like, I don't think.
I agree with you.
I don't
you.
Think anything can distract from Epstein.
I agree with you. I agree with you. By the way, if anybody wants to buy the book is for sale.
No, it's not. Are you crazy? Do not say that. Oh my God. You're going to have like crazy Israelis like trying to, oh my God, just stop.
I know. We did try to auction it. It was really crazy. Some like crypto bros tried to buy it. Some very interesting people. It's been very a fascinating journey, but everybody is nervous to have this item in their possession. As you can imagine, everybody's scared. Cause it's, I mean, there's never been, besides this was the first item of the Epstein estate ever auctioned. It didn't sell, of course, but then a blazer of his sold. But there's nothing else of Epstein's that's ever been sold or is public or available or in a museum or anything like that. So that's why it's such a unique artifact. And of course, it has all the numbers and codes and all sorts of cool things and handwriting in it, too.
Sheesh. If Chris doesn't get suicided before, hopefully we'll have more updates on that. But let's do the super chats. Keep up the good work. You all's work is most valuable that you all know. You are helping civics within the American demographic that usually wouldn't be privileged to hear all of your objective unbiased analysis. Thank you so much, Adasunu. We really appreciate it. And we appreciate you guys watching. And we really appreciate big news. We hit 40,000 on YouTube. So thank you guys so much.
Congratulations to everyone, really. Thank you for all your support. And also, little teaser. So right now, people asked where I was traveling. So I am currently in Brazil for COP30. I'm with the Iranian team here. And we're talking about the Zionist war crimes and their environmental impact. I'm here with some fantastic people that you all know, some great influencers and people who are journalists, activists. So it's going to be great. Get ready for some content dropping in the next few days about that. And of course, we're going to continue talking about the imperialist war of aggression on the peoples in the Middle East and all around the world.
Oh, thank you, Will. As always, one of our best subscribers and followers. Hope you're all having a good time. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. And lastly, a question for Chris. Will Chris be releasing the interviews he did in Kursk on DDG? Where are the interviews? Are they up?
They might be talking about the interviews with the prisoners of war. Those are going through a secondary process, like, because of course there are still active court cases in the Russian Federation. Some of these people have committed war crimes and crimes against humanity. So all of their interviews have to be checked and thoroughly, you know, gone through so as not to cause a legal situation where, you know, there could be question about evidence, question about the jury, question about the court, question about, you know, the information getting out there before people have their due process. So I just want to make sure that all this gets set, but it's in the pipeline. It's coming.
Perfection. And like I said, the leaks are still coming out. We will have a space shortly following this stream. Chris is obviously still traveling. Chris, you can leave whenever you want. But other than that, we will see you guys on Sunday and we will do a deep dive into the Zelensky corruption scandal. Thank you all so much. And don't forget, America's got no talent. I came up with this concept, but
I love it.
Area executed. Yes, I did all the super chats. Thank you for reminding me. I do appreciate it. Thank you guys. And again, follow Gen X Girl if you guys don't already. And we will see you guys on Sunday. Thank you.
See you on Sunday, everyone. Take care.